Welcome, ladies and gents. I'm Lana. With me is Melissa, the talented writer who runs thenewfemme.com. She's a wife, mother, and a full-time technical writer who has a keen interest in politics, culture, and philosophy. She started thenewfemme.com to connect with men and women who willfully reject the sham we call postmodern society. We'll talk all about women. Melissa writes, "The truth is, women only care about two very basic things. When we're young, we want to be pretty, we want to be sexy, and we want to feel desired by a strong, masculine, authoritative man. The best possible man we can attract. When we're old, we want to feel needed, we want the security of family in old age, and we want the bonding and trust of the people we love unconditionally." But we'll also talk about the virulent hatred of femininity, the war on truth and beauty, and how modern women need to be lied to. Well, welcome, Melissa. It's so great to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me and inviting me. I'm really honored to be here.
Yeah, I've been enjoying your website. Yesterday, I was kind of junking out on it, going through all the articles, and I love your writing style. I think it's fun and it's edgy, and you say a lot of really important things in a fun way. So give us a little crash course into your journey toward the red pill, if you will.
Well, I was just a garden variety, middle class, moderate American, I guess, for such a long time, because the way that things were in the past didn't facilitate having to be so extreme on one end or the other. But then all of this corruption started happening with the government, and everybody's sort of going crazy over WikiLeaks right now. And I started following them back in 2010 when the cable gates came out, and I was really astonished at how just terrible things had started becoming, particularly since 2000 when Bush 2 came in. So I started to wake up, I guess, when that happened. And so I went from being sort of a moderate to becoming a libertarian to becoming just a straight full-on reactionary. And the anti-feminism tied into that, like becoming a reactionary became post-feminism for me. That was what kind of opened up the door for me. And then after that, I just kind of figured we're not going to be able to go back to the Renaissance period with femininity. There isn't going to be women that are going to be, you know, aristocratic or, you know, embody sort of a royalty. So my thing is that the new femininity, I guess, means it's what it is to be feminine in this day and age, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you and I actually, we come from the same generation, right? Generation X. And I definitely got swept up without even knowing it into some of the feminist BS. How about you?
Oh, definitely. It's permeated everything that has to do with our entire culture, from TV shows to academia to, you know, even just public school or everything, entertainment, all the books that I've ever read, everything that I learned in college, and to not have a counter narrative. Because I've heard that in this country that there hasn't been any kind of conservative literature that has been distributed among us since the 60s. So everything that we've read is left wing. So it's hard to delineate between anything else. So those attitudes are just entrenched in everything.
I find too, it's tougher to wake a lot of women up to come to more of these kind of alt-right topics. You know, they look at it as extremist because generally they just go with the mainstream flow, don't they? Don't women generally do that? But you actually wrote an article about, you know, the types of women that are more prone to be drawn into our message. What can you tell us about that?
Well, that's true. I don't know. I kind of go against conventional thought among people on the right. I kind of got poisoned by the whole manosphere movement a few years ago, and I totally buy into a lot of the things that they talk about as far as the difference in gender roles. And women tend to not be attracted to the truth. They, because I mean, they operate emotionally. They're very, they speak from the heart, and they don't really apply logic to many things. So I think the reason it's a tough pill to swallow. All of these things that we discuss in red pill theory, and a lot of the things that we discover, it's ugly. I mean, nobody wants to face that. You have to have some sort of the stomach for that, and I think a lot of women don't have that. The kind of women I think that we could draw in are women that are family oriented. I notice there, because the family unit in itself is a hierarchy. So if women are accustomed to that, and they've got this order in their family, they got older brothers or older sisters or something like that, they may be more acclimated to it. But I mean, with this single mom generation that we're raising, and these people are just so far from the truth that I don't know how to get through to them. So.
I think too, women that have been more sheltered, they haven't actually seen the effects of diversity. They haven't actually traveled around the world. They're actually harder to get on our page because they haven't been through some of the hard times. There's been some women that have seen and who have lived through some of the things that we're talking about. They're easier to get on our page, right?
Oh, definitely. A lot of these cosmopolitan liberals that live sheltered away from, you know, anybody or any racial differences or even sex differences. I mean, they're not attractive enough to venture out and like have a taste of what it's like on the sexual market. And they're telling us that, you know, a guy can put a dress on and be call himself a woman, or, you know, all of these ridiculous things that they turn upside down that just have no basis in reality. So,
yeah, it's true, because when we talk about femininity, it's become almost like a dirty word, like, oh, you're like bowing down to the male patriarchy wanting to be feminine. But when a tranny or a gay guy is like, I'm so feminine, all of a sudden, you know, I'm feminine too, then they like celebrate it, don't they?
Right, absolutely. And that's one thing that I get a lot online, is that you're a guy. They'll accuse me of being a man on Twitter, and somebody made a really funny comment the other day. They're like, oh, they won't believe you when you say you're not a man, but they'll believe Bruce Jenner when he says he's a woman.
Yep, that's the times we're in. Well, you wrote a piece also called The Virulent Hatred of Femininity, and you talk about how basically the average woman doesn't want other women to radiate, right, with beauty and health and sexuality. It's kind of, there's a rising, what is it, crab in the bucket mentality, right? Tell us about that.
Well, it's true. Women don't like to be in competition with each other, and it can be pretty fierce. But a lot of it has to, the crab in the bucket mentality that women have is, you know, they're so programmed by the liberal narrative that they think that having children and, you know, raising a family or acquiring a decent husband or, you know, dating people in a normal relationship is somehow pathological. So they hate anything that women try to do to sort of turn that upside down on its head, I guess you can say. So when you dress up nice or you have really long hair or something, they're always trying to attack that. Oh, it's a bimbo, or you and your fake boobs or something ridiculous like that, you know. And it's just, I mean, women want to be pretty. I mean, what is wrong with that? Every woman wants to be pretty. I think women want to be pretty more than anything else. And I just don't see how that's such a crime.
No, I think it's based out of evolution, right? We want to look the best that we can so we can catch the best man that there is. Ultimately,
absolutely,
that's what it is. And also, yeah, it's okay to want to be fit and beautiful and feminine, but now that's frowned upon. Like, what are you trying to better yourself and make yourself look good? What, for men? What is this? You know, again, they think it's male patriarchy programming that's making us do these things.
Well, yeah, it's for men. I mean, come on, you know? I mean, I like, what kind of woman doesn't want to bask in attention like that? I don't know a single one. You know, you get to be my age, and when they stop looking, that's when you start getting, you know, paranoid about it. But I mean, I mean, it's sexual selection is part of our makeup. It's part of us to want to, I guess, peacock and look good for the opposite sex. I mean, that's as natural as the animals that do in the animal kingdom. When you got birds that build up a big nest or something to attract the best mate. I mean, that's just...
Yeah, it's funny. Even the male birds, they have to have some kind of bling, don't they? Or like a fancy tail feather and do a dance,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I hate to use that stigma that we compare ourselves to animals. But, I mean, when it comes to it, we're living organisms that are here to survive and to procreate. And one of the ways to do that is to show that you are fit for procreation.
Yeah.
Well, the women that want to demonize that are obviously not fit for procreation in and of themselves. I mean, you know, look at them.
Yeah, it's true. A lot of times when you look at today, especially the young housewife that's home and cared for, she's generally pretty attractive. Like if you go out to the suburbs and stuff, I think that's why the TV shows, they always try and put them down, right? The slim girls that have their green drinks and go to yoga or whatever, they're always trying to tear them down, but they're actually more fit than a lot of these feminists.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's what I mean. It's just the demonizing of the whole feminine condition. They don't want to see you succeed, and they don't want to see you see other men feast their eyes upon you because it reflects back on their pecking order in the sexual market.
I always think it's such a shame among European women because there's, you know, we're a minority on the planet. Why can't we just back each other up and be cool about it? I think a lot of these women not having a racial tribal consciousness has been really harmful to women because they attack each other, they're catty, they fight over a lot of materialistic things instead of thinking of like, yeah, she's part of my tribe or part of my extended family. I think that would actually go a long way. I mean, you see black girls that do that, Mexican girls that do that, you know, they always back each other up in the end, even though they fight like crazy.
That's definitely true. I think the only camaraderie that white/European women have is, you know, with shopping and stuff like that, or materialism. But one thing that I noticed that hasn't been so far tainted by feminism is extremely high fashion. I mean, the European women are still killing that, and they probably always will. So, I mean, that's one haven. I think that European women, they're on top there. So
yeah, it's true. Traveling around Europe quite a bit and living there for a while and still living there, they are more feminine. I guess they dress nicer. They take care of themselves. A lot of American women kind of just, well, not all. There are a lot of attractive people, but they generally just kind of let themselves go, which is unfortunate.
Right. Exactly. I had a friend that I used to work with her, and she was really sloppy and dowdy. And she used to just dress like a complete bum at work. And,
the American, the jeans and the t-shirt every day,
no,
you know.
Even worse than that, she looked like she just rolled out of bed, and it was terrible. And she went to Italy for like 3 weeks on vacation, and she came back a brand new woman. She was fixing her hair, and she went out and got tailored clothes, and, you know, she started applying the makeup, and we were sitting talking about it, and she was like, she's all, I understand why you like to dress up nice. I understand why you like to put your face on and you like to have, you know, your hair done. She's all, because in Europe, she's all, everybody does that. And it just sort of, I don't know, it rubs off on you over there. That's what she told me.
In Italy, they may not have a lot, but what they do have is fine goods, good quality goods, you know, 100% wool or silk, and then they just rotate that. Whereas America, we just buy a lot of cheap crap. You know, we go to H&M or Gap and just load up on all this junk, basically. Yeah, I'd rather have fewer things but have finer, high-quality things, and I definitely think Europeans, well, maybe it's kind of going away, unfortunately, but that is a philosophy that I personally like myself too.
I agree. But I think that Europeans have the monopoly on that. There really is no comparison. There's anywhere in the world where you're going to find high fashion like that, where you can get a, you know, people will go out and spend $3,000 on a bag because it's just absolutely gorgeous, and it, you can't find that anywhere. So
Europeans, we do make nice things.
Yeah.
We make fine luxury items that everyone wants to buy, right?
Absolutely.
So let's talk about feminists, you know, that you encounter, or I know that you're working. So how is it, you know, you have long hair, you like to dress up, you like to wear heels, you know, you say some things that are offensive to feminists, but how do they treat you on a daily basis when you encounter those kinds of lefty women?
I don't know. I just kind of don't really pay that much attention to them, but they can be really nasty in a working environment. They always want to, I don't know, working with women is just awful. And one thing I notice is they always want you to cut your hair. They'll always say something like, God, how do you manage all that hair? Doesn't it get to be a pain? How can you, you know, it must be hot in the summertime. And my former stylist, she used to say to me, every time I'd go in for a trim, she's like, we should cut some of this off. You'd look really good with this.
Yeah, what is up with that? I've been seeing that too in lefty papers too, where they're complaining about women who do braids because fascists do that, or growing our hair long like it's some creepy, weird religious cult thing. I mean, they really have a problem with that.
Well, to me, if you're doing those things and those people are complaining about it, you're probably on the right track. So
yeah, it's true.
Let them be... you know, let them be hurt over it. I mean, we just have to, like I've heard you say several times, we just have to do it.
Yeah.
Just have to go out and do what we want and not care.
That's right. You gotta have thick skin, you know, and be a leader, and then eventually they'll come squirming and follow. That's how it is, you know. They like the alphas, right? The alpha females and the males who just don't give a damn and do what they do and forge their own path. You know, they may get some flack in the beginning, but later on, everyone will end up following them. It's true.
Right. That's true. We have to bring back some kind of standards, because as it sits right now, there just doesn't seem to be any.
So thinking in terms of feminists, what do they think that they have to offer? They claim that we're liberated now, but what do they still have to offer?
They think that having a bad attitude and having a vagina that they spread around town, and you know, their birth control, which, you know, keeps them sterile so they can't procreate. That's what they think they have to offer. And it's really absurd. They go around bragging about how they can't cook, or
that's embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, let alone it be something that, you know, women do. It's women's work. But I mean, it's a life skill that all people should have, to know how to cook.
Yeah.
You know? So they're always trying to denigrate anything that has to do with, you know, where a female would be naturally inclined to want to pursue some sort of life fulfillment. Like cooking for a husband, or even having a husband. They frown on that altogether. So, you know,
I don't need a man, but I'll take all their affirmative action and welfare and aid and let them protect me in war, right?
That's right, exactly, yeah.
Oh, geez. Now, what do you think about these women that think they're liberated as they sleep around with different guys every weekend? What is that going to do to a woman over time?
Well, I think number one, they're fools. And number two, there are selected people. They're rabbit people. They just don't care. They're out to just do whatever pleases them without any kind of thought process behind it. it's absurd. And they're always really broken people. They always have to have some kind of medication to take to dull the pain, or they're drinking. I've had a lot of friends in my early 20s that were kind of cruising around with the boys doing that sort of thing. And they all ended up addicted to painkillers or something like that.
Yeah, so, and they age horribly too, don't they? All the drugs, yeah, and alcohol and sleeping around. They look like they're, you know, 50 when they're, or 60 when they're 40.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's really awful. Especially, I'm going to be turning 40 soon, and I look at them and I'm just like, oh my God, I can't even recognize most of them because they just look terrible. And I want to try to avoid that as much as possible to end up, looking bad. I mean, I'm going to look that way eventually, but I want to try to put it off as much as I can,
I
for
think
now.
too the key is to age with grace, right? So when you're 50, don't try and wear mini skirts like you're 25. But I also see that with older women in this day and age too. You can dress appropriately and still look classy for your age without trying to look like a 20-year-old tramp like some of these moms do now. I mean, they go to Beyonce concerts with their teen daughters now. It's crazy.
Yeah, for sure. They're in some kind of contest to stay young. Like we were at dinner one night with this couple, and they were talking about their glory days when they used to go and see Tesla and stuff like that. And they would talk about how the women would throw their underwear on the stage or whatever. And then I made a joke about the women still doing that today. Those same women that were at the Tesla concerts are going back to like the revival
It's
concerts
true.
and throwing their
Oh,
underwear on
man.
stage.
So
It's
sad.
just, it's beyond sad. It's like,
You wrote another good piece. I'll pull it up here. How we can win the war on truth and beauty. And I've always been saying that too, that there's a war on beauty. It's just undeniable and truth. That's a given. But why do you think that is?
well, I everything is just been subverted. Up is down, left is right, right is wrong, good is evil, evil is good. And to a lot of it has to do with people don't have to struggle anymore. With all the technology and everything that we have, all of the conveniences we have in modernity, people don't actually have to do anything to, I guess, harden up or be somebody or do something special. We can just have the technology or the artificial supplantation of work or productivity or beauty. Let those things speak for us rather than go out and try to get them ourselves.
I think too,
And
it's a lot of Marxist envy that's come out and laziness mixed together, right? So it's like, if I can't be that, then I want to destroy everyone else that has that. We used to, in the European way, used to be hierarchy. Hierarchy, that's exists. It's nature. There's going to be some people that are better than others. It's just the way it is. But now you've got the losers who are like the loud ones in society, and they're jealous that they're not on the top. So they want to fight. There's always more losers than winners. So they're basically teaming up now to tear down those that are the noble ones or the aristocratic ones, if you will.
absolutely. That the whole left-wing movement, one could argue, is driven by envy, period. If you examine what each different facet of left-wing ideology is based on envy. From wanting socialism to affirmative action to feminists. I mean, I've always said feminism is affirmative action for ugly people. So the fact that we have to have, that's what I'm saying, the entire our s entire civilization and society surrounded in modernity is being artificially propped up. All of these or normally organic systems where we would, like we'd have a natural hierarchy are being supplanted by left-wing envy and different avenues that they can take through the media or, through anti-right-wing campaigns. Whatever they can do to subvert that is they've accomplished it.
And the only way that they can force equality is basically bringing everything down to the lowest common denominator, where the bar is hardly up high, so that everyone can pass, right? It's a scam. They're trying to prove that equality is real, literally by dumbing people down and making them making them poor, forcing this equalization, right? Actually preventing people, in this case, like white people, actually putting laws in place to hold them down so that everyone else can come up. It's just ridiculous.
Well, if it's any indication that they have to implement that in order to keep people down, then I guess that should answer for you what kind of hierarchical structure we actually have. They have to have all these, you know, artificial things in place to keep us from advancing. Then who's at the top of the food chain?
That's true. Good point. Yeah, you had another good line in your article about, you know, always be better than everyone says you should be or could be. Never settle for good enough. Talk about this idea.
Well, people have a problem with wanting to accomplish anything on their own. There are still a lot of people that want to, you know, stand out and do something special. But like you said earlier, it's frowned upon. Failure is rewarded and success is punished. So I don't know how things are. I don't know how to get. The only way that we're going to get rid of that is to have that whole system, I think, just come down.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like when it's people like us or people that are more right wing that are striving for more, they want more, they want success, they want to be better, they want to do better. People look at them, this crab mentality that I see that in socialist Sweden too. Who do you think you are? Do you think you're better than me? You know, they actually want to tear you down for that instead of looking at it like, hey, you're my brother or my sister, we're the same ethnicity, you know, we're part of the same nation. Let's hold each other up. But I think that that's what a lot of this leftism has done, as opposed to nationalism that actually tries to build each other up and celebrates when one of their own is successful and doing well.
Well, we definitely should start giving kudos where it's deserved to people. We should definitely praise people for their accomplishments. A lot of this that's driving this is the online mentality, but anybody that has any kind of success in real life, you know, that speaks for itself. This outrage culture that we have online is sort of driving this accelerationism towards just mediocre standards. But I mean, before that, you know, back in our generation in the 80s, we used to be able to see, you know, really good looking people or really rich people like Donald Trump be the beacon of anything that anybody in the United States would want to accomplish, you know. And now that's being demonized as if it's something that's not something that we shouldn't even aspire to, or something that we, you know, is evil or isn't. We have to look out for the collective good of people, and that means, you know, giving them all our money or giving them all our praise or giving them all of our just giving up all of our aspirations to sacrifice for the collective. That's the whole mentality that's behind that. I mean, there's no concept of exceptionalism anymore.
Yeah. And yeah, the other day we were driving around. Well, we've seen it many times. There's this ad around here of, I don't know, some dairy company or something. It says, better than it has to be. I'm like, that's your tagline? Better than it has to be. It's just like, we're just a little bit above mediocre. And that's their, I just can't believe that that's actually happening. You know, wow.
A lot of people probably lap that up like, oh man, that's so great. Somebody I can relate to.
Well, right. I related to a line that you had. You said, you know, when you're on this path, every day people are going to tell you that you are doing too much, that you are too extreme and you should tone it down or stop being so crazy and obsessed. So you get this too? I used to get this line. I used to get it from normie friends, but I don't have any normie friends anymore. So that's okay.
Yeah, no, same here. I don't either. But no, yeah, I get that a lot. There was an obese, another obese, dowdy woman that I worked with. And, I used to work early mornings, and I would come in and try to spend as much time as I could with my family before I'd hit the road. So I'd come in and I'd take a few minutes before my shift and put my face on. And she would oh, you got this one over here putting her makeup on like she's got people to impress. And that, you know, just like, what, am I supposed to walk around looking like you all day? You know, is that going to make you feel better if I do that? You know, that's ridiculous. They've always got something negative to say, you know, about that. Or I was just taken aback by that comment. And it's like, so caring about your appearance or caring about looking clean and kempt is somehow, you know,
something
not
negative. Yeah, something bad. Yeah, I used to get from, you know, normie friends doing this kind of work, like, geez, why do you care so much? Why is this so important to you? Just relax, take it easy, go have a drink. And that'd always irritate me. I just couldn't be friends with people like that anymore. I'm like, because this is a war. I mean, look at the times that we're in. How could you not want to do something or say something? And I just can't sit there and just kind of numb the pain and just go party like nothing's happening, you know?
Oh, definitely. Like you were just saying that you had a lot of normie friends. Yeah, I don't have any of those anymore, unfortunately. You kind of take a pretty big sacrifice going down this road and kind of, you know, taking on this thought process, and a lot of people aren't going to want to follow along with you, and I know that.
Yeah, I find you know, you have different friends at different seasons of your life, and a lot of those normal people are just boring. They're just boring. They have nothing fun to talk about. They're not interesting. I just can't take it anymore. But obviously, with the growing tide of, you know, this rightist movement, there's tons of people now. Now we're connecting with all kinds of people, which is great, because then you have the kind of friends that are more fun and interesting, and you actually get something from those relationships. I just stopped getting anything from other relationships, and it's supposed to be a reciprocal thing, a friendship, right?
Oh, definitely. And if it, you know, if you do decide to kind of confide in them what your feelings are, they'll try to demonize that. And then they'll point their finger, well, I'm a do-gooder and you're the bad guy, so we can't be friends anymore.
Yeah. I can't be friends with racists. You're a
right.
racist.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the things that I went through with that was, I mean, because it, you get called that enough, and then it just doesn't matter anymore. So it took me a while to kind of become acclimated to being called that and not caring. But it, you know, the herd instinct and the herd mentality that people have as a natural response to, you know, any kind of controversy. I mean, it's not for the weak, the weak of mind.
I find now it's super easy, since, you know, I've been called so many names. It's super easy.
Yeah.
It actually energizes me now, because I can just treat them like my footstool and just step on them and laugh. You know, that's just how I visualize it in my mind.
That's yeah, funny. For sure. Definitely.
Yeah, you also wrote, too, that you kind of went through some ugly phases, and you said, you know, to grasp the truth, let it burn and sting you, because truth and beauty comes with pain. Tell us about this idea based on your experience.
Well, in the piece, I talk about how I was just so ugly when I was like 10. I was like from 9 and a half to about 11. And
we all have those ugly phases, trust me.
Yeah, they say all women or girls go through that ugly stage. Well, mine was just, it was terrible. And it's not like I was some kind of a arrogant little snot before that happened, but it really gave me a perspective on how cruel life can be, and it's not going to do you any favors, you know, because I had friends that were maybe a couple years ahead of me, and they were starting puberty and everything, and they were starting to get all this attention from the boys and stuff, and I was just over here this hideous creature that I got ridiculed quite a bit for it. But I mean, hey, you know, like you said, we all go through that in our lives. But it just taught me that, you know, there is no equality. there's people aren't going to be kind to you just because, you know.
And there's always going to be someone better than you around the corner. So just accept that, but also use that to motivate you to become better. To make yourself become better, right?
Exactly. That was another thing that I talked about with the little girl on the playground with the cute boys. It's like, God, I wish I could be her. I wanted to be her so bad. And I was just obsessed with her. I was this little kid, and I, seeing this beautiful young girl and just how charismatic she was, I was like, I want to be like that. I mean, maybe that's wrong or right or wrong, but I just, there's something about her that I want for myself. And that's, I think that, what we talked about earlier with hierarchy, it's striving to have something like that. I just don't think there's anything wrong with that. You
No.
should always.
Yeah, I think there are certain archetypal ideals. That's why they've arisen, because we collectively agree that, yeah, this is the supreme. This is what we want to strive for. This is what we want to be like. Our whole mythology is full of that. So we're never going to get rid of that. Just like this whole body positive movement where they keep trying to put down attractive and say that, oh, it's just in your mind. It's just not going to work, because these are ancient embedded archetypes that are based on real truths here.
Right, definitely. Those are always things that we're going to want to strive to be, whether we want to demonize them in public to get likes on Facebook or Twitter or not. I mean, beauty is, it is what it is. It's its own defense. It's you can't taint it, with by trying to say that someone that isn't clearly isn't as good or righteous as that person is, better. There's a there's some they want so bad to push this moral indignation against anything that's good or pure or righteous, and we just have to we gotta put our foot down. I mean,
It's
it's
true.
now.
These liberals, they're very pious, aren't they? Very pious and religious. It is a new religion. They're worse than any Christians. I mean, these atheists are far worse than what they accuse the Christians of doing, actually.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like the Stalinist. I mean, they've killed Christians throughout. He killed 60 million Christians. So I mean, if that's the road that they want to go down with ushering in Islam and all of the repercussions that are going to be a result of that, then I really don't have anything to say except I fully resent being one of these people that's switching deck chairs on the Titanic with them, because I don't want to go down with them. So, the sheer amount of disgust and anger should be enough for anybody that's paying attention to just want to do exactly the opposite of what these people are pushing.
Yeah, I think the feminist movement has done a lot to destroy our society, to tear up the family unit, our biological roles where we function the best. Do you think that all phases of feminism have been destructive?
Yes, I believe that because it's a self-centered or a femme-centric movement where it focuses on the woman herself instead of for her family or for her husband or for her children. I think that as human beings, I think that both women and men were made to be self-sacrificing and not to be selfish. So, feminism is just, it's the finger pointing at themselves. I need this, I need that. And a lot of them are ending up miserable alone. So it's me, 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 me. Well, if it's you, that's where you're going to end up, just you.
Yeah, exactly. All by yourself. That's true. And the very first phase of feminism, too, was about they wanted the right to vote. Well, guess what? There was a one vote per household, right? People voted as a unit, and that
Right.
functioned, had a important function in society. And then it's basically a lot of spinsters that didn't have a family, or they had issues with their husbands or something, that were really pushing this, no, we need to have our own vote. We need our own. So it was creating division right there from the
Right.
get-go.
Yes. Oh, yes, definitely. That's what the goal of feminism is to destroy the family unit and to break up, because I mean, if without a these you destroy the family, you destroy a society, and that's what we're witnessing right now. I've never, when I was a kid, I'm sure you can relate to this. There was no such thing as a single parent household. I mean, this was just even, what, 30 years ago. And
if there was, they were usually trashy people, right? They were frowned upon.
Yeah, it was something that happened to, like, indigent people or people that just, you know, they're drug abusers or something like that. But we all had nuclear families. We all had, I mean, that was completely normal, you know, and the dad got out of bed every day and went to work. Mom stayed home and took care of the kids. My mother didn't go to work until I was in high school. So nowadays, I think that's been totally subverted. Now it's rare to see a nuclear family, whereas every household now is a single parent household or some variation thereof.
It's funny you say that. Right away, I thought about this show, The Man in the High Castle. There's this poster, Henrik, you can pull it up, and it's here's a nuclear family, right? This is how they portray them, right? They're blonde, they're happy, they're clean cut, and they're Nazis. You know, it's just ridiculous.
But look at that, and I think, what's so wrong with that? That looks pretty damn good to me.
I know, exactly. It's ridiculous. So how do you think, you know, modernity has really destroyed our natural, healthy roles where we're the happiest as women? I mean, are most women really happy going to go work for someone else and push papers all day and then just buy stuff and go home and be alone? I mean, is that really a fulfilling life?
No. I was a house, before I went back to work earlier this year, I was a housewife for almost 10 years. And there I had no other time in my life where everything was just wonderful. It was more than I'd ever dreamed it could be. And it's really sad that women have this sort of animosity towards that. When modernity doesn't have anything to offer in exchange for that. Are you going to be on your deathbed holding all the corporate reward plaques that you got? You know, are you going to be holding those up in good memories and celebrating that while you're, you know, in your bed with cancer? I don't think so.
Yeah, what's success without a family to share it with, right?
Absolutely.
And the thing is, we can do different things in different phases of our life, right? I mean, you can stay home and raise kids, and then when they're older, you can do other things. I don't know why so many women view it as such torture. I don't know. Maybe they just chose the wrong husband, or what's the problem?
Well, I think having kids early, because a lot of people underestimate their lifespan. I mean, you got... After the kids are gone, you know, you have a whole couple more decades that you're going to be working and doing stuff. So it's like, why not have the kids when you're young and fertile and, you know, it facilitates having young children as opposed to waiting, having this career until you get to be, you know, 35, 40, and then you want to have kids then and maybe have, if you're lucky, if you have one. You know, I think, but that's the problem with our society now is that everything is disincentivized. People have to go to work because they can't afford it. They can't afford to have families. I mean, a lot of like for instance, my niece, she's only 31, and they just had their first baby, and I'm just like, oh my goodness, you need to have some, you know, a lot more. She's all, I can't. She's all, because they got the mortgage and they got, you know, all these bills and stuff. And she's like, I want to have more. I just can't do it right now.
People always say this, like, God, you can make some sacrifices. Geez, it's always white people that are acting like you have to have $1 million to have a child or something, you know? It's not the case. I mean, there's poor people. I mean, there's Mormons we know that are poor and they can have 6 kids. You know, they make it work.
But that's the thing with Mormonism is the government would normally step in. Mormons take care of each other.
Yeah.
And other than Mormonism, I don't know of any other structure in society that facilitates helping families in that fashion. So the government is paying illegals and stuff to come here and have kids.
Oh yeah.
But could my 31-year-old niece go and get, you know, welfare and housing and stuff to help her have kids? No, and plus she doesn't want to do that. I mean, no white person does. Nobody wants to live on welfare.
No, it's embarrassing. It used to be embarrassing and it was looked down upon to be that, but just as an experiment, there should be some some women that like have, you know, 5 kids and then try and go get welfare or something, you know. And if they get denied, then make a huge story out of it, right?
Well, with this crappy media, the horrible media we have, it just get buried anyway. They just turn, you know, with the selective outrages, it only goes in one direction, and it's not our direction. It's other people's direction. All the people that are coming to destroy our civilization, those are the ones that get all of the benefits that are out there to be had.
Yeah, I know. It just makes me livid. It makes me so angry, you know. Well, but then sure. we just sit around and no one does anything. They don't complain. We need like massive tax revolts. That's what I'm waiting for. And we need millions of people to do it. Otherwise, they'll just come haul us off and put us in prison, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I see that coming. I just see anybody that's on our side sees that for what it is. And it's I hate to sound black pill or pessimistic or anything, but it's the government spending and the insurmountable debt, and it's going to be cataclysmic. So once that comes down, then perhaps we'll have a chance at some type of hierarchical organic movement that will, you know, come to fruition. But in the meantime, this artificial system is going to be continually propped up with white people's taxpayer dollars and the people coming in to enjoy the fruits of those tax dollars.
So, I'm convinced too, if there weren't any white people, the tribal elite will just continue printing more money. Just they'll print it out for, you know, until, you know, give it away to all the non-white people until all the white people are wiped off the face of the earth, I swear, you know.
Jeez. Yeah, that's what they're doing. I mean, just redistributing the wealth to themselves, and you know, they're making our money worthless and basically every institution in the West absolutely worthless. So I mean, how do you recover from that? The only recovery there will be is when it all comes down and people can get in there and start something new.
Yeah, that's why it's important for people to move. And I know a lot of people are doing that, finding good friends, actually claiming an area, moving there, maybe taking over the city councils. I've even talked about, how about buying some old ghost town with friends and fixing it up? And then we can be the town mayor. We can be the council. We can be the business owners. It's going to take work. You know, it's always work. We can't just sit around and do nothing and think it'll just become better. You know, maybe not our lifetime we'll see things, but maybe not our kids' life, maybe our grandkids' lifetime. But it's important to work towards those goals now, I think, because it's inevitable. You're right. This is going to collapse one way or another. It's going down.
And it's really sad that the legacy that we're leaving our children is this disaster that we, you know, generations of people have reined in, and they're going to be here to clean it up. And with the family unit just completely annihilated, and you know, how does one pick up the pieces after that if they don't even have a basis upon which they can identify with another group, or they have something to fight for? I mean, people aren't going to go out and fight for dildos or fight for their porn and all that. They're going to go out and fight for their families or for their kin or their people. But where are those people now?
Yeah, we're, you know, so spread out. And another thing too, it used to be that most Europeans were farmers, right? So in a sense, they were small business owners. They were self-sufficient. They knew how to take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. Now we're all just in the cities and no one knows how to grow any food anymore. I mean, that's got to change.
Exactly. But one of the things that they ignore in the country is there's a lot of middle Americans that are sprawled out all over the the breadbasket states of the in the middle there, all of these coastal states and all of these coastal cities, those are just going to be, they're all going to be like Detroit eventually. I mean, I don't think that that's going to be stopped. But I do believe there is hope in rural America, where, like you said, people can go out and build communities anew and start something special.
Yeah, I'm going to have to start claiming that now, because with this population growth, geez, America, there's 1 million legally coming in a year. I mean, that's like a big city every year, plus all the illegals. Where are we going to put them? Just going to stack them up all the way up from the bottom of the Grand Canyon and just overflow them in all our woods? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Well,
yeah, I absolutely. But the problem with that is these people absolutely cannot live without government assistance. So the more rural you get, the less government assistance there is going to be. And they don't like small town living. They don't like small town mentality. And it to them, it would be a complete culture shock, and they would be completely alienated to try and assimilate in an environment like that. I mean, you got people in the woods out, you know, in Montana. They know how to hunt. They know how to fish. They know how to make clothing and all of this. And they have to do all of that on their own. I mean, obviously, you know, nobody's going to come in and do that for them. These people that are invading, do they know how to do any of that stuff? No.
No. Yeah. And it's interesting you say the rural areas, too, because places like Minnesota, Middle America, they're just dumping all these Somalis and Africans and Arabs there now. And also the invaders, they just tore down Calais, you know, the camp there in Italy, mm-hmm. and they're dispersing them into countrysides. The countryside, it was happening in Germany, France, Italy, and like in manors and castles. That's what they're saying. They're putting them up in these countryside manors. It just makes me so livid.
Well, it makes you wonder, wasn't that the plan all along with getting rid of Calais? Why can't they send the people back to their country?
That's just it. Yeah, that was the plan, obviously.
Right. So, I mean, how much... I could just imagine the European people thinking of in terms of that, thinking, good Lord, this peasant from, you know, hell on earth is over here occupying this beautiful landmark with rich European history. I mean, there is going to be war over there.
Yeah, there better be. It almost makes you think that, like, the elites are placing them in these places in the countryside on purpose, just to tantalize us, just to mess with us and make us mad. I questioned that the other day.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with it. They know that their mere presence there is an affront to the entire, structure of living, the culture there. They know that it's an egregious assault on, the people that are living there, the native population. They see this foreigner there that doesn't belong there, has no desire to assimilate, has no desire to do anything but make trouble. Of course, they're doing that to irritate the native population there. I 100% believe that.
They have to go back. They have to go back. There's just no other way around it. And I think eventually there has to be an uprising where all these people can go back. It's just a matter of writing a law, right? Just write the law. All you guys have to go. All the people that came here from such and such year, you all need to go.
Well, it'll either come that way through force, or there will be such a breakdown. The gravy train is going to get cut off, and life is going to become so unbearable for these people that they may go back to their homelands on their own accord. So the native population is going to have to take measures to try to ensure that that happens by making things unbearable
That's
for them.
That's right. That is the smart way to do it, I think. Yeah. Have them voluntarily deport themselves because it's just so uncomfortable for them. I like that idea. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, you wrote an article recently, there was a SJW tries to dox me for crime think and fails miserably. So what happened? I mean, this is crazy how they go after you and people like me. It's amazing, isn't it? You can't have a different opinion. How dare you? We're going to come murder you.
Yeah, it's fallen short of the murdering part, but they think they're going to try to go after my job or something. I get this constantly, at least once a day now. I think I get somebody that threatens me with, oh, I'm going to, you know, I know where I'm going to call your employer. Good luck finding it, because you're not going to find it. So the way that you have to deal with these people is, in that regard, is just stop caring. I don't care if these people think that they're going to try to find me. They can't. I've had it happen, you know, a few times in the past, and they've never been able to find anything about me.
And so they're so nice too. Look at that, Trump supporter and racist rich bitch, right?
Yeah,
such lovely people. Lovely.
Oh yeah, the lovely and the tolerant and open-minded crowd. Their shtick, right?
Yeah, all these people are talking. It's like, okay, if you show up at my house, that's another thing. But most Americans, most right-wingers are armed, and these lefties know that. So I doubt that they would try to come to your house.
I'm armed to the teeth. Come on over. You have a real good time. You come over here, buddy.
So how do you think is a good way to deal with SJWs? I mean, there's a lot of people that are remaining anonymous, and I'm looking forward to the day when that's going to change, you know, people are going to come out more, but there's still a lot of fear about that. You know, we're the ones that are in the closet, right? So how do we deal with SJWs?
Mock them, ridicule them, humiliate them, just knock down their social status to nil. That's other than going out and stringing them up and hanging them from a tree, that's about the only thing legal repercussions you have right now. Whenever they come after me, you know, I mean, their position in life is just so absurd and ridiculous that, I mean, they're easy to take down a few notches. Yeah. You know, and people need to kind of have that sport mentality that these people are, it's open season on these people. I mean, I'm ready to go to war with them.
Yeah, so they're low hanging fruit, most of them. It's so easy to mock them. I mean, we gotta have fun with it. When their words just don't have any power over you, it's become they like freak out when they see that happening, and it's so fun to make them freak out. Like, I'm not afraid of you. I don't care what you call me. Like, that's all they have is words. That's all they've been doing for the last 15 years.
Right, and then the whole economic terrorism where they try to get in touch with your employer. Well, I want to just say that people need to be more vigilant. If they're going to put their employer on their Facebook and have all this personal information out and, you know, announce it to the world, and then you're going to go out and try to speak out against this, you're basically shooting yourself in your own foot. You know, I'm not saying that we should hide, but at the same time, you have to be vigilant and understand how these people, how they operate. And, you know, they're out constructing these mobs and going after people. I mean, you got to protect yourself against them. Part of what I do to protect myself is I keep myself really private. A lot of people don't know me. They don't know anything about me. I mean, I'm just not one of those people that's out there, you know, look at my life, look at what I do, and here, while you're at it, let me put a target on my head, and, you know, you can dig up whatever you want about me to use it against me. So,
yes, the days that we're in, I mean, I value privacy too. There's some things that just you want to keep private to yourself that are sacred, not for the whole world to, you know, dig into. But a lot of these young kids, it's true. They put everything on Facebook, everything on Twitter, Instagram, all these pictures. And they're going to regret that one day. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, these teenagers at, you know, 15, what they're putting online nowadays, it's going to haunt them, you know, years later, I'm sure.
Yeah. Everything is a big forecast to everybody. You know, I'm forecasting this, that, and the other. I like the people that, you know, they post all these pictures of how rich they are and how much money they got and all these things in their house, and then they put down that they went on vacation, and then people come over and rob them, you know. Oh, I know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, okay. I mean, it's your funeral. If you're going to, you know, put that much information out there, then I guess it's it's on you. I just refuse to do that. I like being a private person. So
nothing wrong with that. Yeah, but you're using your real name here today, and there's a lot of people that don't even have the courage to do that in the current climate.
Well, I mean,
that we're in.
Part of it has to do with being anti-fragile, like Taleb says. I'm not in any position where these people can harm me. And, you know, they can damn well try, but they're good luck. You know, I have full faith in, you know, I don't fear these people. I don't fear anything that they could possibly. The only thing I fear is the man upstairs himself. So as long as I have that with me, I have no fear of these people or what they say or do or their little witch hunts or whatever.
Yeah, it's amazing too. A lot of these lefties, how they're, you know, feminists and they talk about this and that, but then you're a woman, no problem attacking you because you're a rightist or so-called fascist or a Nazi. So we can hang those women, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, they claim to support all women except any woman that's right wing. I mean, look at the way they go after Sarah Palin. I mean, the things that they say about her and
she's,
you know,
tame compared to us.
Oh yeah, we're the animals out there among these conservative people. We're the bad guy, you know. So
you're voting for Trump, right?
I am.
Yeah. When's the last time you voted? You said you were a libertarian. Me too. I just didn't believe in the political system at all for years. I just was independent. And now it's, you know, Trump is actually the first candidate I voted for, and I can't remember the last time I voted.
Well, I hate to divulge this, but I actually voted for Obama in 2008. I got swept up in the
what was his stupid slogan again?
Yeah, yes, we can.
Yes, we can. Oh, my God. Yeah.
And, you know, I guess the reason why is because if we had a viable right-wing candidate, then I would have voted for that. But McCain was just terrible. I hate him. I can't stand him. And then, you know, I got so disillusioned with the whole Bush era that I was like, okay, you know, I was the sheep. I bought into the we need hope and change. So, and especially because I watched the 2000 election basically get stolen. I remember sitting on the living room floor at my mother's house and just watching it on TV live with the whole Florida count catastrophe. And I was just like, oh man, this is really bad. So, and then, I don't know, Bush is pretty tame compared to what followed in the Obama administration, I think, which is sad because they're both just horrible.
yes, they are. So do you think there's going to be voter fraud?
Yes. There's already instances where they've been talking about all over where they're being changed. The votes are being changed.
Yeah, the machines.
And those Diebold machines, and there's no way to reconcile the votes. You can't go back in and audit them or anything like that. So, and then I've heard of the illegals voting and stuff. Like, the illegals can vote here.
Yeah, how is that? How can they vote? I know people that are residents from Europe, and they're not allowed to vote. So, how do the illegals do it? There's some network they find out about.
You know what, as much as they're trying to get these people to go out and vote, it's just not happening. These people have no interest in coming to take part in the democratic system of voting. So I imagine one day when they get enough people here, enough illegals or just enough invaders here to take over the system, then you know, they'll go out and vote in droves, but there's just not enough people yet for that to happen. We'd have to go to a really a majority non-white for the voting bloc to be formidable, I think.
We're going to be doing a live stream and covering the election night, so maybe you'll jump on there and join us at some point. It'll be fun. I think we're going to plan to go November 8th. I think we're going to start around 8 p.m. Eastern time and maybe go till 2 or 3 in the morning. So hopefully we'll know by then, get a count of who's winning.
Oh, okay.
Should be fun. Well, before we wrap up, why don't you give us your website details, your Twitter, and tell us what you have going on next?
Well, you can go to thenewfem.com. I haven't written much lately because I'm just so busy with work, and I just haven't had much time to sit around and write because it takes me a while. And you can also come to my Twitter account, which is also thenewfem, twitter.com/thenewfem.
All right. Well, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure, and I'm so glad we've connected, and we'll definitely do this again sometime, okay?
Oh, I know. I had a really good time. Thanks for having me on.
Without a doubt, there's a war on truth and beauty. So how do we win this war? Always speak the truth and surround yourself by beauty as much as possible. Call beauty by its name when you see it. Create rituals and personal habits to facilitate truth and beauty in our daily lives. There's another kind of truth and beauty, one that we acquire through pain, sacrifice, and hard work. It's the fire that refines you, reshapes you, and reinvents your entire being. The leftist mind revolves around envy of beauty, resentment of truth, and fear of the warrior. When truth, beauty, and the warrior are combined, they are our weapon to restore order and balance in this modern, distorted world that values weakness, ugliness, and evasion from reality. Find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+, and be sure to visit redice.tv for all our content, including Weekend Warrior, public live streams, articles, and radio show archives. Thanks for joining me. Take care.
Stay.